Welcome to the Working Robots Podcast. The following is a conversation with Rick Stetches, who has been a worker at the Chrysler Automotive Factory plant in Detroit for over 20 years. This episode offers a unique combination of the perspective from an automotive industry worker, as well as an observer of the technological advances in self-driving technology.
Hey, Rick. This is Arthur.
Hey, Arthur. How are you? Good evening, or afternoon, wherever you're at.
Yeah, I know. Right now, I'm in Japan, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. Good stuff.
Pretty far out.
Hopefully it's not too early over there.
No, it's good. 9 a.m., not a big deal.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, not at all.
I'm just getting ready for bed, and you're just starting your day.
Look at that. Yeah, no, so I really appreciate you, like, taking time out to, like, you know, chat a little bit about this.
No problem. Just crazy days at home and crazier days at work, so it's all good. It's part of the deal.
Yeah, no, right. Cool. So this is, like, the first episode of a podcast that I'm trying to launch, and the idea is really just to kind of, like, interview people about their interaction with new technology, and the episode that we're going to do is called autonomous vehicles. So autonomous vehicles touches a lot of areas, and one you know thing that it touches is definitely like the manufacturing of it, and interestingly enough. I just wanted to interview you kind of about your perspective on like autonomous vehicles, and you know, from your work directly in the assembly plant, like what's your perspective. And so I just have a few questions, and you know, we can just chat, hang out.
Okay,
cool. So I guess like the first question is, so can you just, you know, give me a little bit of background and, like, you know, you and your life and, like, how you, yeah, just tell me your story.
Okay. Let's see. I just had my 20th working year anniversary here at Chrysler. So that's kind of a big milestone. Kind of makes you think 20 years goes by fast when you get in this industry. People say it in the beginning when I got in, but it's true. It's just a blink of the eye. It's like, holy cow, it's been 20 years. So not sure when I'm going to retire, so it's exciting to see the future and what's coming. And it's pretty cool. But I started out at the meat potatoes of the auto industry with the, you know, just working as an operator on the floor. You know, just throwing on bumpers and mufflers in the truck. So I've always worked at one truck, born and raised in chassis, if you will, and still there, still doing the activities that I do when I started there. But now it's, you know, much bigger, different role of what I started with. You know, when I started, it was just, I would read a track sheet, I would go run and pick up the part, and literally run, and then go put that part on the truck and go do it again, do that for 8-9 hours a day. So it was hard, but at the same time, met a lot of cool people, some interesting fellows that I still talk to this day, but we've all pretty much moved on and done different things and moved on to different plants. So still kind of wild that I've been in chassis for 20 years, and I've only been in that department since I started. And then about 15, 16 years ago, I was approached by a launch team supervisor or management, asking if I would be interested in doing launch team activity. And I said, sure, I'll give it a try. Why not? Something new, something different. I had no idea what I was getting into. I was just more or less a guy that was helping, a guy in my area that knew all the parts and the insides and outs of the truck. And then from there, I went to another facility. I think back then it was Jeep Truck Engineering down in Detroit, which was like a satellite pilot facility for truck. Since then, it's dissolved. I think it's just in shambles now. But back when it was just regular old Chrysler Automotive or whatever we were at the beginning, and then just kind of caught on, and then from there I would just learn new parts and new processes of the truck, and would work with engineering and then design leads to say, hey, no, it would be better if this bolt would go this way, or if we designed in a flag nut instead of using a reaction bar that would break every month. So things like that, just give engineering the insights and kind of the more hands-on approach of the operator's life, of what we went through on the floor, of what we would do, and that's kind of what it evolved to. And from there, now it's 15 years later or so, and now it's like there's all new methodology with WCM, with world-class manufacturing, and we go through now and we break down each job and the elements and see if they're safe. If you look at postures of what the operators are doing, and you try to design stuff out of what they're trying to do with these vehicles, and try to make the operator more safe and make everybody more proficient at what their jobs are too. So, and then I could go on and on. There's a whole lot of stuff going on about WCM and the world class manufacturing side of it, and of what we try to do, and how we track things, and try to make that launch curve faster and safer and more productive and save money too. So
what's WCM stand for?
World-class manufacturing.
I see. Okay.
It's I think it was adopted first through Toyota. I don't know if it was actually called WCM, but its philosophies have now transferred into for when we went to Fiat, and you can just see the differences in plants. And I do travel around to different plants. I go to Toledo, Jefferson, or JNAP. I'll go to some other facilities, and you see, what they were and what they are now, and it's leaps and bounds.
So, one thing that I'm interested in learning about is how has the plants become more and more automated over time?
It's pretty wild. Some of the older plants have gone through some pretty heavy renovation. I helped launch the new truck, the new GT, which is the new Ram 1500, which is not a Warren truck, is at Sterling Heights Assembly Plant, and they put a lot of money in there, and they had us, they had our launch team from Warren Truck. We didn't know if we were getting the truck or not, so they had us kind of first in early design ideas, and we had our input. We tried to make things better that weren't, of course, going on with our truck, so we tried to do a few things there. But then we learned that Sterling Heights was adopting its own workforce, so we were pulled aside, and then we were asked to help launch their truck with their launch team, which was kind of a different deal. But it was kind of neat seeing all the new machines and the new robotic cells that were going in and what they were doing to make the truck better and the quality better and make things easier on the operators. One thing, for instance, in the chassis area, all the chassis carriers are towed by AGVs, so automated units, and that unit has the ability to go up and down with the operator and what they're doing. So if someone's putting in a shock absorber and your posture was to go bend down and go get it, now we can actually elevate that chassis and get it in optimal height in your zone, to get that operator in the right position and doing that job more efficiently.
So is your perspective on automation, is it a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing. It's kind of neat to see from my facility truck to what Shaft did. And there's some things where it's like, it's good and bad. Because at the same time, with AGVs and with a lot of automation, things can go wrong. You know, there's a lot of bugs to fix in the beginning, and they had their problems. They had their growing pains. So they're still ironing some things out. Our plant that Warren Shuck is a chain on edge plant, and it at one time was making upwards of 74 trucks an hour. We slowed things down a lot tremendously. I think we're now at 47 to 50 jobs per hour. But at 74 jobs per hour, that chain on edge was still flying. And Shaft is capable, I think, of that line rate too, if not a little bit higher. But it's good. I mean, it's good and bad. You know, obviously, with me being hourly, a union worker, I don't want to see anybody lose their job. But at the same time, if I can make a robot do something safer, more efficiently, more accurate, it makes sense. It makes sense for the product. It makes sense for the customer. And it's just the right thing to do too. In some aspects.
Have you seen a reduction in the number of workers over the years, or is it held pretty steady?
It's pretty steady. You know, one thing, you know, like if I'm telling somebody, hey, your job is going to be taken over by a robot, there's really not a whole lot in chassis in my department. You really, you know, you don't really lose your job in the UAW. You just get reallocated. It might have been a good job, might have been easy, but a robot might come in and it's going to do it more efficiently, more accurately. And we see more robotics and more automation in our body shops because it's, you know, it's now all laser welding. It's all seamless. They're using polymers now. So it's pretty evident that, you know, a human can never really do all that super efficiently, super fast of what these line rates are doing now. There's some stuff they did at Shaft with the glass cells for the windshields. We still to this day at Warren Truck use a manual operation, the guy loading some aspects of the gas glass cell by hand. Well, now at Shaft, it's all done robotically, and it's safer, it's more efficient. You don't get nearly as many window leaks, so it makes sense doing that thing that way for the quality of the vehicles.
Does it make the job more boring?
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, there's always going to need to be the need for operators. There's going to have to be someone has to load the glass to the cell, sequence the glass and sequencing racks, you know, stuff like that, for example. I don't think we could ever get a robot to teach how to hand start a brake line, you know, with the intricacy. You have to have feel, you have to have touch of craftsmanship on some of these jobs that we do on the line and the auto industries.
That's amazing. So, like you said, you know, in the UAW, you don't get, you just get reallocated. What's the, can you walk me through what the, maybe like educational retraining or anything like that? What's it take to be reallocated?
It's pretty informal, I guess. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're going to go in and say we're going to college educate you, but it's just more of on-the-job training, or we're going to teach you a different area. And a lot of stuff we do now within WCM is we rotate. So you're not just going to be stuck on one job doing bumpers all day. That's not fair to any human to do that all day long. Or, you know, so we're going to have you rotate in a six-team rotation or an eight-team rotation. So you're going to learn bumpers. You're going to learn how to secure them. And then you're also going to learn how to put on brake
It's like the what has been the biggest reallocation you've seen, like in terms of changing you know, someone's work, I guess.
Well, recently we had like a manpower reduction, manpower movement with the derate of our line. So we went from 74 jobs an hour, and we turned that all the way down to, or first we had a shift elimination. So there was three shifts. We were running 7 days a week, you know, 10 hour shifts. So you'd have one shift come in, one shift would basically, the line would never stop. So you're just building trucks, as, you know, around the clock. And then with that, you know, sales went down or the new truck came in, and then that workforce then was then reallocated to another facility. And then within the, you know, the truck industry, SUV industry, we've got another facility coming now in downtown Detroit. I forget the exact location with the new Jeeps that are coming in. And some of this, I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to speak to of it being in the pilot, you know, pilot world. So
yeah, that's fair.
Can't say a whole lot.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of new stuff coming with you know, workforce and reallocation.
Is there any factories dedicated to autonomous vehicles yet?
That I don't know if I can talk about yet.
That's fair.
I don't want to get myself in trouble.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, there is stuff coming down the pipeline. And I think it is public that we are working with Google on some stuff. I think we partnered up with MFCA and Google and, you know, other industries. I think, what did I read? Mercedes and Apple are working, or was it BMW and Apple? So it's happening. It's coming at us. And it was something I was reading the other day. It's like, this is like the newest thing in the auto industry since it started. So it was kind of cool. It was a cool read. It was like, this is like what they were dealing with when they started thinking about the Model A and the Model T. It's like, it's all new. It's just, it's coming. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. What do you think of when you hear autonomous vehicle?
I have a good ride to work. In the morning, it's about 30 to 40 minutes. On the way home, it can take up to an hour, hour and a half. And I think to myself, I'm like, it'd be kind of cool just to sit back and just, you know, look at my phone or you know, talk to my wife while I'm driving instead of driving. It'd be kind of neat. Sometimes it's just like, I'm still kind of old school. I still just like to go for a drive. It's kind of it's therapeutic, I guess, sometimes. A lot of times when you're stuck in traffic on 696 east or west, and it's just stop and go, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. And we're not really a big city in Metro Detroit, but a lot of people commute, obviously. But it's interesting. I see good and bad to both of it.
Yeah, what would you say are the pros and cons of autonomous vehicles, in your opinion?
I think it's going to make vehicles safer, because some of the stuff I am seeing coming through the pipeline, it's like the stuff that they're designing into these vehicles, it's just, there's backups for backups in these things. So if something goes wrong, you're not going to be just stuck by the side of the road, or you're, you know, you won't be able to take over manually and do things or not do things. It's not like the car's just going to all of a sudden, you know, have artificial life and take you to Toledo on your own and you can't get out of your car. I think it's going to be interesting to see the technology evolve even in the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah, I can't imagine my grandmother driving
on the street. Yeah, I'm trying to talk my dad into getting out of his flip phone and getting an iPhone. He's so hesitant. It's like, yeah, he'll never have an autonomous vehicle.
Yeah, that's so true. Great. So you would drive an autonomous vehicle? I take it.
Yeah, I would definitely try it. I don't know if I would. You know, I would like maybe first rent one, or you know, in my industry, I could probably get my hands on something a little bit easier than you know Joe Smith and the public. But I would definitely give it a shot and see what it would be about.
Okay. Yeah, no, cool. So, like, one thing that I was concerned about is that, you know, the auto industry employs about 1.2 million and a quarter jobs directly, and then a 7 million and a quarter indirectly. And I was just, you know, if we make autonomous vehicles, then maybe there will be a reduction in how many cars you need per family. And so.
You know, I thought about that too. It's even with standard cars and trucks now, they're so expensive. It's like, what will these families be able to afford? You know, 5-10 years from now, it's like your baseline, you know, truck or minivan or SUV is like starting at like $40,000 or $50,000. I mean, your lower income families really can't get into something like that anymore. It's crazy what these prices are doing. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just a wait and see thing. You always have to price vehicles, and you have to lease vehicles, you know, at an affordable rate. Otherwise, you're not going to sell them.
Yeah, there is actually a lot of hope that autonomous vehicles will reduce the cost and bring back a lot of that money to you know mm-hmm. families, and so that is definitely a pro, my opinion.
Maybe it's more of like. You know, autonomous goes more towards like the rideshare stuff and stuff like that, to where it's more, you know, the more urbanized cities, the bigger cities, your Chicago's, New York's, and stuff like that would have more of a buy-in on something like that in the beginning.
So, you know, I do research on robots. You know, I work in a research lab all day, and I don't really have the on-the-ground perspective. And I think that's what really motivated me to, you know, reach out and see what other people think about what's going on. And and I was just, you know, I guess one thing that I was, to be frank, I was just concerned about is automation and basically taking people's jobs, you know, and that's what do you think? That there's a remote possibility of that happening, or are you concerned about it in any way, or?
Probably not in my career. I definitely, you know, see things, and even with the way we do things now, you want to make it lean as possible, as efficient as possible, because at the end of the day, you're running a business, and I get it, you know, it's, you have to, you know, pay, you know, 500 guys to build a truck, and you want to have those 500 guys, and I'm just throwing numbers out there, but do that the most efficient way, the fastest way that you can, so you're making a profit at the end of the day with the vehicles. I think in my lifetime, in the next 10, 15 years, I don't think you'll see a tremendous, you know, like shift of manufacturing jobs manufacturing folks losing their jobs. I get it, you have to be lean, but at the same time, you still have to have people to do some things to build these vehicles.
Yeah, right. Do you do any of the hiring? Do you ever, like, hire new people on take?
No, I'm just an hourly guy. Okay. I do see, you know, a lot of people come in. We recently had, what was it, 4,000 people that we came in and trained at Warren Truck. And we had to go through a process of, you know, taking an aptitude test and to pass a drug test. And we brought them after they passed all that, and we put them through a battery of work hardening, if you hear what it's called, to where we would work with them 8 hours a day. We put put them through a battery of real on the job, you know, things that we were doing. It was in a static environment, so it really wasn't on a moving line, but it helped us, you know, weed people out there. You know, are you really sure that you're ready for this? Because this is what it's going to be, but it's going to be even harder and faster. Because, you know, you get out on the floor and it's different than, you know, what it was 10, 15 years ago. It's hard work in there. You're doing a lot of repetitive work over and over, and you got to have the right people to do it. You know, you see some of these kids come in. I sound like an old guy now. I am an old guy. But if you have these guys coming in, I think it's just, you know, you come in and you look at your phone all day and you just put on a nut and a bolt and you're done. But it's not. You're doing a lot of stuff on these jobs, a lot of physical labor. You got to be in shape and you got to be the right mindset to do these jobs. And you know, you got to be cognizant of what you're doing out there.
Yeah, no, that's right. Okay, cool. And do you have to do like reskilling like every now and then? Like, do they have to take a test or is there,
myself, we do a lot of training. We do a lot of training at the NTC Center through the union or the UAW. Mm-hmm. They'll get us through and they'll teach us different ways to train, and we'll go through training of different methodologies and stuff like that. So I'm about, you know, every 6 months I'm doing some different training.
Okay, cool. And then that each subject is on like a different aspect of the line, like I don't know. Would it be as varied as like, I don't know, this might be not, like welding or something like that? I don't know.
Me not personally. I'm more, you know, the chassis guy. So it's more of, you know, the way WCM is working, and it's more of the way we track how we're making changes, and then the way we're documenting things, and how we're documenting what we're doing through WCM, because everything is tracked, everything is now, you know, done efficiently as possible.
Okay. All right. You guys ever work with virtual reality at all? I'm just curious.
We do. Yeah, we do. It's actually been implemented on the program I'm on right now. We're just dipping into it a little bit. So it's pretty cool. We can put on the goggles and we'll have these joysticks, and we'll have the truck right in front of us, if you will. And you'll get in there and we'll set up a station according to what the operator would be up against. And we'll say, okay, now bend over there and put this nut on the bolt. Can you reach it? So you'll see the reach, and we'll set up barriers too of what actually would be in your way. So it's really exciting to see all that. And we can set up any job, any position, and see, you know, like if I'm 6'4", and if I have to do something that is really low, then we would say, oh no, let's try to do this in a different area of the line that would have different height. And try to optimize, you know, that feature there. So yeah, we just started doing the virtual reality stuff, and it's really, really changed. We did do some on the last launch I did about 5-7 years ago, and it's totally changed what they're doing now. It's just much more advanced, much more accurate, and a lot more flexible what we can do with it today.
Yeah, what do you think is the future of you know, Detroit industrial manufacturing? Like, what do you think is the future for you?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's always going to be here in the Midwest, and we've got the corporate core here. So it's always easier to work with your engineers close to the plants, I think. You know, one of the challenges I saw was when we had our St. Louis plant, and there was a truck plant out there. It was great people, great facility. But to go out there and to implement changes and to do things that we were doing was really difficult and expensive. It was costly. And then back in 2009, when the economy all took poop, it was one of the plants that didn't make it or didn't survive during the economic downturn. gear, but I think still, you know, the Detroit area is still your core. You got your engineering community, you got your engineering houses, your outside, you know, facilities and network closer to the automotive factories. So I think that helps.
That's right. And then finally, like, what, you know, do you have anything you want to say to the researchers on, you know, autonomous vehicles, I guess, or might be in?
I don't know. I mean, it's still, again, it's in its infile stage, so I really haven't seen a whole bunch. I've seen some stuff going on. I mean, it's just, to me, it's like, don't ever lose the fact that someone wants to drive this car. Don't ever make an autonomous vehicle where it's just never got a steering wheel. You still want to have to go for a drive and take it. Yeah. Go for a ride. To me, there would always be that person who wants to, you know, go for a ride in their car. Hear their car roar, if you will.
Yeah, that's really real.